Welcome to the Blockchain DNA Podcast. This show brings you the latest in blockchain technology and global developments in business and fintech. Presented by Metaverse DNA.
DNA, the Metaverse Dual Chain Network Architecture.
Hi, I'm Alex Lightman, and this is the Lightman Report on verifiable pseudonyms. Let's get started. So here's what we're going to go over today. The global identity verification market is growing, why pseudonyms are important, identity in the post-COVID world, fakes and fraud, no privacy, no security, pseudonyms and anonymity, VPN is the most popular digital pseudonym, blockchain as a form of pseudonym. How can blockchain help in creation and verification of digital pseudonyms? And benefits of cryptography, an example of blockchain-based identity system. And then DNA's system for blockchain and digital identities, digital avatars, and basically how this increases safety and security. So why are pseudonyms so important? The pseudonym is our second face in the digital world. Digital identities and pseudonyms give us access to digital services, and it can be our alter ego. So you can use the face of Katy Perry, but say, hi, I'm Jane Smith, and people know that that's a pseudonym. You don't want to give your identity because there are people who are stalkers, people who are scammers, phishers, and all kinds of things that you don't want to leave yourself open to all of the bad actors in the world. And in the post-COVID world, digital identity is more important for interaction than real identity because we're spending more and more of our time in digital worlds online. Fakes and frauds. Hackers and criminals use fake documents for know your customer procedures, and there's no strong solution for online verification that can solve this problem. It's an ongoing problem. It's part of why there's over $400 billion a year of cybercrime in the United States alone. That would probably mean the problem is over $1 trillion worldwide. That's a lot of money. And there are problems with traditional authentication. So customers use a combination of username and password to be authenticated for online services, but that takes time. For remote authentication, in most cases, identity owners are obliged to respond to security questions regarding their personal and sensitive information. There are whole movies where the plot revolves around tricking somebody into telling you the name of their first pet or the color of their first car or their mother's maiden name. And users spend a great deal of time proving their identity, and they risk their privacy by giving up their private identity information. And there are high costs of this. Even small businesses with fewer than 500 employees lose over $200,000 annually to employees due to the amount of time spent with password management. So the employees are spending so much time logging on and screwing around with their passwords and forgetting them and so on that it costs a lot of money. It basically costs what it would cost to have 3, 4, or 5 employees for a typical small business. And no privacy. Individuals' identity assets are stored by third parties, and the third parties, whether it's a website or a company or a government, keep silos of identity data. Monetization of big data is the new oil. You actually generate more money from big data in the United States now than sales of oil. That's not just a metaphor. It's a real economic fact of life. So it's more important to monetize that for ITs than building for IT companies than building proper security infrastructure. And blockchain-based identities can change this situation. And if you look at this kind of data, for the data is the new oil, raw survey data, log files. As I was taping this, a friend of mine was doing a thing on how to use quizzes to get people into your sales funnel. Previous employee data, notes, customer info, contracts, emails, bills of lading, all that is in silos, but it can also be correlated to make a pretty clear picture of a business person and then possibly to steal that person's identity. Also, no security. Each service provider keeps some portion of an individual's identity information for identity verification. And hackers are constantly stealing and attacking these systems to steal it. So you see this. This is just a giant cloud, a storm cloud, a perfect storm of the world's biggest data breaches and hacks. Facebook, 420 million accounts were stolen. Indian job seekers, 270 5 million accounts. OxyData, 380 million accounts. Orbitz, 880 million accounts. Marriott Hotels, 383 million accounts. Equifax, 143 million accounts. And that person, I remember very clearly, she had 2 degrees and they were both in music. She didn't even have a security or a computer science background in that. This whole thing is treated as a joke by most corporations or many corporations. And so where do pseudonyms and anonymity come in? Well, the threat of total control is a basic part of digital society. People have lack of privacy in the internet and they try to hide their identity, and we need to find a compromise between security and privacy. And VPN is the most popular digital pseudonym. So there are more than 3.17 billion internet users who are using VPNs for. And blockchains are a form of a pseudonym. So through the usage of, although the usage of pseudonym avoids linking transactions to the real identity, users are not totally anonymous in their movements. All usages behind these pseudonyms might be traceable and linkable, especially when handling multiple entries and transactions with several addresses from various accounts belonging to the same user. And it's a form of compromise between security and anonymity. How can the blockchain help in creation and verification of digital pseudonyms? Well, blockchain's innovative technology has the potential of bringing transparency and trust by distributing the storage rather than centralizing, creating a trust digital identity, automating the processes with smart contracts, and having a concept of a decentralized digital identity is a major part and perhaps the starting point of a blockchain network. And we see all the things around identity management: digital increase, delegation, platform, security, authorization, applications, protection cost, roles, productivity, privileges, certificates, system, access, technology. All these things are all related. And blockchain ledger is immutable and transparent based on permissions, and immutability and transparency are fundamental for identity management. The blockchain is resistant to single point of failure and denial of service attacks, which just rippled across America in mid-June. And blockchain eliminates or reduces monopoly in identity management, as it's not controlled by a central authority. So you're not going to get this honeypot of 880 million identities just with one hack. And I wanted to talk a little bit about DNA Metaverse. So DNA blockchain and digital identities. DNA Chain is an open source public blockchain creating a decentralized ecosystem of digitized assets and identity. Through Blockchain as a Service, or BaaS, it provides enterprises and individuals access to customized, convenient, and secure blockchain services. DNA Chain builds identities called avatars to expedite KYC, AML, know your customer, anti-money laundering procedures, and implement self-sovereign identities. And if you're interested in what self-sovereign identities are, please refer to the Lightman report before this. And we also have an interview with myself and Ken Wong and Annemieke Dirkes, where we discuss that. The DNA Chain adopts a multi-layered approach towards security and privacy, and the DNA team is working on implementing interoperability with other blockchain and DNA oracles that can track the actual use of funds outside the chain. So digital avatars. Metaverse DNA is a blockchain project that provides a foundational infrastructure for social and enterprise needs. The goal is to construct a universe where digital assets and digital identities, the avatar, coexist seamlessly. And DNA also builds the basis for asset transactions with the help of the value intermediary, the Oracle. And as the company says, thus establishing a new blockchain ecosystem that will transform human society and allow us to enter the new reality. And the idea is to balance off scalability, security, and decentralization. And the end result, according to the company, is that DNA leverages hybrid consensus algorithm of proof of work plus proof of stake plus delegated proof of stake for better consensus algorithm security. And DNA uses template-based smart contract instead of full Turing complete smart contract to limit security vulnerabilities. And for wallet security, node security, DNA includes security controls. So that's my Lightman report on the use of pseudonyms. I hope this is useful to you, and I hope that you don't get hacked in the future. Thank you.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now, back to the show.
Welcome to our interview on the 9th Lightman Report that's on verifiable pseudonymities. A hot item since we have been talking over the last weeks over digital identity, virtual identities, avatars, sovereign identity, and today we're talking about verifying pseudonyms. Now, I want to get into something really important for the user. If we look at KYC on a centralized system, and we compare that to a pseudonym on a decentralized system, what are the advantages for the user, Eric, would you say?
I want to say three things. So what's important KYC on decentralized system? Remember, when we talk about blockchain decentralized system, we always talk about immutability. So it's immutable. Whenever you write into it, it's there. It ensured by the timestamp and the signature by the private key of the owner. Then we talk about ownership, the ownership of the data. So when we do KYC, we leave personal data. These personal data owned by the data owner, which is ourselves. That's very important. And third is authorization. So when we say authorization, it's just like a database. So you need to be authorized to be able to read information, KYC information, write KYC information. And well, in the blockchain world, when we say modify and delete, those are bad words, right? But sometimes you need that. So to me, the advantage of using a decentralized KYC system is that you walk into the system, you have 100% confidence that the record's immutable and you own these data. And people are authorized to read, write, or edit or delete. No, let's keep the edit and delete away. So read and write your data.
You can't delete anything. You can add. Only add.
Well, sometimes it's in error, right? So sometimes it's sensitive. Let's say medical records. Let's say, I have HIV, right? You don't want people to know that, or say I'm cured. So maybe you want to delete. I don't know. I'm just saying.
You could store that in a way that it stays private. It doesn't mean to be given free for general accessibility, but you can't delete or modify anything on the blockchain. It's the principle.
That's why I say sometimes in the blockchain world, modification and delete is bad words. So we're talking about KYC, right? So KYC is in a human world. Sometimes humans like to modify and delete things. Well, no deletion. I also say deletion is bad, but modification, I think it should be allowed sometimes.
It's a newer version. Like you can add a newer version that represents the same, I would say, usability or service that you can use that replaces something else, but it won't take away the old.
Right. Well, just for the protection of the doctors, right? The doctors say, hey, Eric, you have COVID-19. Then 10 days later come out and say, oh, sorry, it wasn't COVID-19, so I want to modify it. But then, no, as you said, you probably say, no, you cannot modify it. You say, oh, I was wrong last time, and Eric didn't have COVID-19. you can leave
that
record.
Enter. First, you're positive, and the next entry, you're negative. That's the only solution, in my view, a blockchain can have, because, you know, if the incorruptibility. So if you put that, and I think, Alex, if you look at the privacy laws that we've got in Europe, for instance, you know, you've got the right to be forgotten. Do you think that having a decentralized pseudonym, as we just discussed, protects you in that sense, that it would be acceptable? Because basically the law says you've got the right to be forgotten, and a blockchain, you can't be forgotten. It's there forever. So do you think
potentially, if it's handled right, it's like so many things. I think that we should recap a little bit of what this Lightman report is in case people are coming to it cold. The basic idea is if you have a verifiable pseudonym, you have a name that's not your legal name, the name that's on your birth certificate, that nonetheless has the ability to say it's you consistently across multiple platforms, and it's not just owned by one centralized company, but you own it, you own your data, you own your identity, but you can present yourself just like you can change your shirt, your tie, your jacket, your shoes. You can change the way that you present to different groups. And there are a couple advantages to this. And one of them is, as you just said, Anamika, the right to be forgotten. It's a tool for that. A second thing is that what I saw over the weekend is an unprecedented level of people attacking people. So I have a friend on Facebook who had people come outside his house and on his beach and trash it, fill it with garbage. And he said, I got all your license plates numbers and I have video of you and I provide it to the police. And a whole bunch of people who were at this place, it was in Long Beach, came on and said, oh, I'm going to get you. And, you know, I would generally advise people not to give their name, which can be correlated with an address, which is right next to a party where hundreds of people just showed up and were, you know, throwing garbage on the beach. Don't necessarily want to have your name be known. And so there could be, for instance, people talking about legal problems, medical problems, divorce issues. There's a market for secrecy. Ingo Walters wrote a book called The Secret Money Market, and he estimated that market at $150 billion a year, and that was decades ago. So it's probably in the hundreds of billions per year. This is not to say that people should not engage in law enforcement, because if you make that identity known to law enforcement, to the tax authorities, to everybody else, and then you can have a legal, not only a verifiable pseudonym, but a legally verifiable pseudonym, so that people who have the right to know that and are seen as good actors can know that who you are, while bad actors do not know who you are. So, and this whole idea of the right to be forgotten is extremely important, because we don't want these databases following us around for our whole lives and then being used to. In America, you can be denied health insurance. So you can't be denied health insurance in the Netherlands or Canada, but in America, you can for many things. So you don't necessarily want things that will disqualify you just, you know, when you need healthcare for your family, et cetera.
I think if you look back at history, it's quite funny that for 50 years, we fought to be recognized as individuals and wanted to be out there as being me. Going from, I would say, the group behavior, more individualism, how much criticized. And now, apparently, we feel it's going a little bit too far. And now we would really like a pseudonym to be, you know, handling our medical records, maybe, you know, handle all sorts of other things. If you look back on that, Eric, these different cultures, how do you see that? Because I think it's rather a funny development, actually, that after all these years fighting for freedom and individual recognition, we now want to move back a little bit from the front end to a pseudonym.
Yeah, it's funny that, I spent about 7 years in China for the, that there, a lot of people know me by another name, a pseudonym, literally Summer Tiger. But my name is Eric Gu, right?
they
call me Summer Tiger, but they, I've
so
been
yesterday
known as
it was the solstice. You were at the height of your Summer Tiger powers.
There you go. Well, if you ask for Eric Gu in China, they don't know who this person is. If you ask for Summer Tiger, I'm relatively famous there, right? So I've been using the pseudonym for a while, but I guess pseudonym is interesting. So when you think about it, you can have many pseudonyms, right?
You could. You bring a valid point, actually. If I do a pseudonym for whatever reason, for maybe my medical records or something else, something very legitimate and normal, how can I be sure in a decentralized system that somebody else doesn't take my pseudonym and acts like me?
That's why you need private key and public key. You sign, you use signature, you use a timestamp, right? So that's the good thing about the immutable ledger of blockchain.
And you can have confirm so that a transaction going through on Bitcoin or Ethereum has to have confirmations from other miners. And right. So you can have other people verifying it. So you can say, here's the pseudonym, here's it, and here's the records showing these transactions, he's moved coins, and here's the confirms from other people who themselves can be confirmed. So it's a system that is basically has a whole chain of a blockchain of references, each one to a confirmed identity, even using a pseudonym.
Would you say that we move them, you know, we all know the terminology like proof of work, delegated proof of stake, whatever all these terminologies are in blockchain, we are then moving towards, I would say, the value of your reputation, of your actual actions, of your pseudonym, value of, I would say, reputation maybe? Is that what we're going for then?
I'd love to address that if you don't mind, Eric, so you have the last word. I met a person who is the head of the computer science department at Stanford a long time ago, the person who was in the 80s. And he created two artificial intelligence software companies, including the first one to go public. It was called IntelliCorp. And I asked him for advice, and he said, be the best or be the first, even if you have to create a new field to be the best or the first. And so you may want to have a pseudonym associated with medicine. It may, and if you're a Renaissance person, and many people today are Renaissance people, they're in multiple fields, but people don't take you seriously if you appear to be good in more than one or two fields. And there are some people who are actually good at five or six fields. So look at so you could have an author pseudonym, you could have a medical advice one, you could have one that's on the 4chan or 8chan where you don't want people to see you. You can have the one for social media. You can have it and then be known within those communities, and they don't cross-pollinate because you don't necessarily want one group to follow you and stalk you in your other fields and try to deplatform you or other things like that.
It's interesting because, Eric, what we then see, the whole view of decentralized is actually more of self-control, I would say, owning your own data, owning your own actions, being responsible for your actions. That actually what I think Alex just referred to is that we actually are decentralizing ourselves. We are actually decentralizing ourselves with a system like that. How do you see that working in metaverse DNA? I know there's already digital identity, we have the avatars, but we move on to the next stage with this now. And I see this almost as, you know, it's the decentralized me.
Yeah, we're going this direction. Decentralize yourself is such a great idea. When you own your data, the data itself, it doesn't matter where you store your data, really. When you have the timestamp, you have the signature, and you have the immutability, and you can authorize people to use. Actually, you can actually lease your data out for a profit, or you can sell your data. That would be so interesting. So these things are, we're designing it. We want to incorporate this into Metaverse DNA project.
I would definitely like to talk some more about the decentralized me. I think it's a very interesting topic regarding what's going on in societies right now, especially with all the changes that we're experiencing. The decentralized me, I like that.
If you want, I can do a future Lightman report on that.
I think that would be an excellent idea, Alex, because I think we're going into that direction. I think out of a social idea that all of this individualism that we saw with the monumentous rise of things like Facebook and everybody going online and having these identities, I sometimes feel that the burden of maintaining all that and being you in so many aspects and maintaining all that is quite a burden on people. And it gives a lot of, you know, responsibilities to follow it up, to be there, to, if you could just split it up. It's kind of a very interesting thought that this is, could also be socially driven, actually. You know, you could be your very serious self being in books or literature, and you could be a flamboyant party animal next day on Instagram on a totally different decentralized entity. I think that's an interesting concept because it doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing something wrong. You just make life more livable for yourself.
Exactly.
So, let's close off with this one. I really look forward to the decentralized me on Metaverse DNA or any other decentralized solution. And I want to talk about that next time. I want to thank Eric Yu, CEO of DNA Metaverse, Metaverse DNA, Both Sides Go, and Alex Lightman, futurist and writer and our weekly author of the Lightman Report. I want to thank you both.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Happy summer.
That was
Happy summer.
Good, guys.
It was good, yes.
That is essential. It's really, that's what we're going for. If you read about what's going on, people are completely cramped as to the demand that modern life puts on them. Imagine what liberating thing it could be that I can shake off everything that's in my past. I can create a pseudonym that's legitimate and that could act as, I don't know, whatever.
You actually could have multiple pseudonyms. It's a many-to-many relationship.
Well, in police records and FBI records, it has a section, a field that says for known aliases, and you could just you could just add a field in the database that says verifiable pseudonyms, and then it's actually one of those things that they can go in and check very easily, and then government won't have a problem with it.
I think verifiable pseudonym for many people lightens up their day, to be honest. Imagine, for instance, that you're very famous and you would have a verifiable pseudonym and you could go online and do shopping. I mean, most of them already do that, but they sort of borrow an identity from somebody else to do it with, you know. And if you could create a pseudonym that actually is accountable and is verifiable, it creates a world of opportunities, actually.
Yeah, of course. And sometimes it's just a place to express yourself, basically.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Blockchain DNA podcast. Make sure to visit our website and follow us on social media at DNA by Metaverse or at MVS DNA. Till next time.